Hello, everybody. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. Welcome to our November edition of the Artful Asking Success Club. Just a reminder, this and every call is recorded and an audio sent to you so that you can listen to this again and again and go back and listen to other calls as well. Welcome again to the call and happy Thanksgiving to all of my friends here in the United States and happy Thanksgiving to all of you everywhere, because each and every day indeed we should give thanks. A reminder that our final call in our Dial Down the Drama program will take place on Tuesday, December 19th. This will be a wrap-up. It'll feature 10 tips that you can use to dial down the drama in December. It'll be our last call, as I said, in this series. I also want to let you know I have a brand new Dial Down the Drama keynote that I used in New Jersey just this past week, and I think it's a lot of fun. And if that's something that would be of service to you or a conference you're involved in, please do set up some time with me at www.schedulealcallwithmarcy.com, and let's talk about how it might fit for you. In 2018, I'll be beginning a weekly podcast, so stay tuned for more information on that. As you know, this is part of my year-long series, Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success in Raising Money and in Our Lives. Drama down, dollars up. I believe that so many times our drama robs us of some precious energy and time engaged in these emotions that don't serve us. In fact, they drain us. And I want you all to see that dial where you can reach up now, and you can turn it down, you can turn it up. You control the dial. You control the dial. I want you to be aware of what cranks your dial and how to manage it. Our success and joy depends mostly on our inner game, not our outer game, our mindset, not our methods. I want you to be aware of how you think, because those thoughts lead to your feelings, those feelings lead to your beliefs, those beliefs lead to your actions, and bingo! Those actions lead to your results. Your thoughts create your actions. Today I want you to think about becoming more aware of managing your energy. We spend a great deal of time and effort on managing our time. How do we squash more into those same 24 hours? How can we multitask our to-do lists? How can we get more into that time? While it's subtle, I think that's not really the issue. I think instead we need to manage our energy. Let me give you a story. Susan is a highly respected 47-year-old VP of development at a major university, married with 3 young kids. She's working 12 to 14 hours a day, feels perpetually exhausted, and finds it difficult to fully engage with her family in the evenings, which leaves her feeling guilty and dissatisfied. She sleeps poorly, makes excuses about exercises, and seldom eats good meals. Instead, she kind of grabs something to eat on the run or while she's at her desk. Yeah, well, that's not Susan at all. That's me. And when my mom's health tanked and I was clearly going to need to devote more time for her care, that was the catalyst for me to make some major changes. The point of this is I don't think my experience is uncommon. I think many of us respond to rising demands in the workplace by putting in longer hours, which inevitably takes a toll on us physically, mentally, and emotionally. Multiply this by entire organizations, and you get whole shops that are declining in their level of engagement, increasing levels of distraction, bickering, high turnover rates. Good gosh, in our profession, the average development professional stays 17 short months, and health issues. It's not just the leadership. With remarkable consistency, I'm seeing more and more development folks pushing themselves harder than ever to keep up and increasingly feeling like they're at the breaking point. So the core problem with working longer hours is that it's a finite resource. Energy is a different story. Energy is a different story. You might remember that I have a degree in natural sciences, chemistry, physics, et cetera, et cetera. When I was in my physics class, we actually defined energy as the capacity to do work. Think about this. Not time, but energy is defined as the capacity to do work. So we can have all the time in the world, but if we don't have the energy to do anything, we're not going to get anything done in that time. So it comes back to our energy. I like the work of Tony Schwartz and something called the Energy Project, and I'll share some of this in our call today. In people, in us, energy comes from four main sources: our bodies, our emotions, our minds, and our spirits. In each, energy can be systematically expanded and regularly renewed by establishing some specific rituals, behaviors that we intentionally practice and precisely schedule with the goal of making them as automated as we possibly can in our lives. So there are go-to actions. In my new keynote, Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success, I talk about this a bit differently. I think rituals are a great way to look at it, but I want us also to look at creating some of these defaults so we don't even stop to think about it, or we don't even say, gee, I'm practicing my ritual. We just have done these so many times that they are our default reaction. Trigger, default. Trigger, default. Trigger, default. So think about that as well. Thus, we cut down the negative impact that any of those drama-producing triggers have in our days. Now, let's talk about this energy research in more detail. To effectively re-energize, our challenge is to shift our emphasis from getting more out of ourselves. So how do I do more? How do I get more out of me? We want to shift away from that to investing more in ourselves. Ooh. So the shift away from how do I get more out of me to how do I invest more in me to bring a better version of me to work every day. Now, I already know that some of us are already triggered by this. Oh, my God, that is so selfish. I'm all about serving others. Yeah, well, that kind of martyr action, I'm serving others to the point where I drag myself into the dirt. No, that's martyrhood. That's not serving. So let's let that go and understand that we first have to recognize the costs that this energy-depleting behavior has and then take responsibility for changing them, regardless of the circumstances we're facing. You need to embrace that you have more value to your life and work when you take care of yourself, and that you have every right to a lifestyle that lifts you up. Now let me hear it. I create my life. So hear me. You, not your boss, not your kids, not your spouse, make you deplete it. You choose. It's always your choice. And it starts with embracing that you are a valuable and worthy person who deserves to have a lifestyle that leaves you replenished, reflective, and enhanced. Remember, in people, energy comes from four main sources. I said this earlier: our bodies, our emotions, our minds, and our spirits. So in each, energy can be expanded and renewed. Let's talk about some simple rituals that can lead to some striking results, okay? So number one, the body. Our physical energy. Now, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, friends. You don't eat well, you don't exercise, you don't get enough sleep, and your basic energy level sort of tanks. And when your energy level tanks and you're stressed out, our ability to manage our emotions and focus our attention tanks too. Nonetheless, many of us still don't find ways to practice consistent, healthy behavior. Now, I'm one of them. I get it. We have a lot of demands in our lives, and we push away our own self-care. So let's start right here and now and take kind of an energy audit. Are we skipping breakfast? Are we overweight? Are we sleeping poorly? And in this year-end and holiday rush, with even more demands on our time, are we pushing ourselves even harder? Take a look at how you're feeling. Put some attention on what you're doing and set some intentions that'll help you get through the rest of this year in a more upbeat and uplifted way and to carry that into 2018. Well, you've all heard the drill. Take time for some physical activity, eat smaller meals more often, go to bed at a designated time. How's that going for you? Another key ritual that's important to consider is to take brief but regular breaks at specific intervals throughout the workday, always leaving your desk. The value of such breaks is grounded in our physiology. Ultradian rhythms refer to 90 to 120 minute cycles during which our bodies slowly move from a high energy state into a physiological down trough. Towards the end of each of these cycles, we begin to crave that period of recovery. Our bodies are saying, hey, time out, I need a break. The signals are we're restless, we're yawning, we're hungry, we think we're hungry anyway, and our concentration starts going. But many of us ignore it, right? And we just say, I can plow through this, I'll get another burst. The consequence is that our energy reservoir, our remaining capacity, burns down even more as the day wears on, and we're doing more with less the whole day. I know you're all thinking, you have no idea, Marcy, what's on my plate. Actually, I do. And I know we feel that need to press on relentlessly. But I don't think we take in that small changes can have major impacts. Some of the things I did when I was at my worst point in my own self-care and self-help was to go to bed earlier, give up my evening, I love a brandy old-fashioned sweet, give up that cocktail, and stop drinking coffee at 1 p.m. This was not a huge sacrifice. I slept better, and then in the morning I had 15 minutes that I felt more awake and more energized at the start of my day to do some simple stretches and just sit. Breathe a little bit and reflect. Some of us call this meditation. I still put in some long hours with my business, and I know when I travel, my sleep gets screwed up. But I practice these rituals as much as possible, take my stretching band with me on the road. I get out the door and walk 10 to 15 minutes at my hotel or in convention spaces. And I monitor my mind to be sure that I'm all in, fully focused on who I am with, who I am, and being present, whether it's family or colleagues. Deeper connections for a shorter time is better than longer time, sort of disconnected, kind of half looking at the phone or half looking at the screen and half listening. Now, I am far from perfect on this, my friends, but I will tell you that especially for me, keeping my mind from wandering, constantly recommitting to being present, being in the moment, has had a major impact on my work and life. Major impact. I make decisions about how much time I'll spend at something. So I'm going to attend this holiday gathering until 9. Then I'm going to walk out the door no matter how much fun I have so that I can get home, get into kind of my settle down ritual, and get a better night's sleep. It's going to give me a better next day and next week if I shorten my time out a little bit. Now, I'm a party girl, and I love to be out and be with friends, and I want to sometimes say, hey, but this is my time. Yes, it's my time, but if I do just a little bit of adjustment to how much time it is, I'll have better results the rest of the time. That's what I mean by I create my life. I make those choices. So taking intermittent breaks for renewal results in higher and more sustainable performance. The length of the renewal, now listen to this, the length is less important than the quality. So as we look at our lives and chunk it into those 90-minute on, 15-minute off kind of cycles, it's critical that we literally just get away from our work, away from what we're doing, that we truly change the channel, if you will. That can mean you get up and you talk to a colleague about something not work-related, that you listen to music, that you walk up and down the steps. And I get that breaks are not the norm in most of our offices, and they're also kind of counterintuitive to us high achievers, but their value is just so incredibly brilliant. It allows that dominant left side of our brain to cool it, and the right side of our brain that gives us greater capacity to see the big picture and make imaginative leaps to kick in and soar in just those 15-minute breaks. So that's our body. Our emotions. Our emotions play a huge role in the quality of our energy. When we're able to take more control of our emotions, we can improve the quality of our energy regardless of the external pressure we're facing. To do this, here we go again, we have to first become aware of how we're feeling. Now you might say, Marcy, I know how I'm feeling. But I'll tell you what, we get that snarky email and we can tell there's a shift. But do we really log into how is this throwing me? How am I reacting to this? When somebody walks by and they give us a look and we somehow read into that there's an issue or a problem. Boy, some of these things can throw us for the rest of the day and we don't even realize it. Most of us realize that we perform best when we're feeling positive. What I think you may be surprised to learn is that we're really not able to perform well at all when we're feeling any other way. That feeling positive is the key factor in us being able to perform at our best. Unfortunately, without us systematically taking actions that help us experience high positive emotion for longer periods, We fail miserably at this. We tend to slip into pretty easily negative emotions, and what that conjures up for us is what we call our fight, fright, or flight hormone. And that's that churning, that's that, you know, when everything kind of comes into knots, that's that adrenaline hormone kicking in. And my friends, they're folks that have shared with me that they literally sleep with that adrenaline hormone going on. They can't even lose it during their sleep, that anxious, impatient, insecure, oh my gosh, feeling. It is the most mind-draining of our energy that exists, and it can cause all kinds of friction in our relationships. The biggest challenge is to learn to recognize what kinds of events or actions trigger these negative emotions. You'd be surprised at the number of people who complain constantly about something, yet don't see it as their problem. They need to gain greater capacity to take control of these reactions. One simple but powerful ritual, and I know you've heard it, but I want to stress it again, in diffusing negative emotions is buying time. We buy time by our breath. Our breath is with us all the time. It's always accessible to us. Those 2, 3, 4 deep breaths can have a huge impact on our relaxation and recovery, and turning off that fight or flight response. honestly, I used to be one of those that slept in an adrenaline rush, and I had to do some deep breathing before I went to bed, as well as some mindset shifts. Another powerful ritual that helps us fuel positive emotions is expressing appreciation to others. It can take the form of a handwritten note, an email, a call, or a quick conversation. And the more detailed and specific, the higher the impact. That can be as simple as saying, "Gosh, Gladys, you look great today," or kind of random as saying, "Wow, what a beautiful sunrise this morning. Gee, what a beautiful day. Gosh, what a great view I have out my window." But something that has a say out loud, that's kind of important. You can't just think it, but expressing appreciation to others or gratitude for our space. As with all rituals, setting aside a particular time to do this vastly increases our chances of success. So you might want to say, "I'm going to start every day by just appreciating my surroundings. I'm going to walk into the office and give 3 compliments before I go to my desk." What I think is fascinating about this is I once had somebody say to me, "Oh, people are going to see I'm doing this." You know, they really don't come in and say, "Oh, Marcy's doing her 3 positive appreciation statements." No, they just realize that I walk into the office every day and I'm nice. And they like it. Another thing that I do is I make it a priority to recognize everyone that was involved in a success story, in a giving success story, from the receptionist out at the front desk to the CEO who stopped in for 10 minutes and talked to a donor when they visited the office, to, of course, the people who are directly involved in having those conversations. It's important for us to change the stories we tell ourselves about the events in our lives that will give us this positive framework. Often we go to, "Oh, poor me, why did this happen to me? Why me?" role of victim, blaming others or external circumstances for our problems. Becoming aware of the difference between the facts in a given situation and the way we interpret those facts can be powerful in itself. You have a choice about how to view events and recognize how powerfully the story you tell influences the emotions you feel. Telling yourself the most hopeful and personally empowering story possible without denying the facts or minimizing the facts brings you the most positive result. The most effective way you can change a story is to view it through any of 3 lenses. Let me tell you about these lenses. With the reverse lens, you ask yourself, "What would the other person in this conflict say, and in what ways might this be true?" That says, "Gee, maybe I've got a role in this." What do you know? It's not just the other guy. With the long lens, you ask yourself, "How will I most likely view this situation in 6 months?" You know, I don't even think it takes 6 months. How is this going to be even tomorrow? Even 2 hours from now? It kind of delays that, "Oh my gosh, this is a crisis reaction, overreaction." With the wide lens, you ask, "Regardless of the outcomes of this issue, how can I grow and learn from this?" So what you're doing there is you're taking a crisis and you're saying, already kind of in the middle of it, you're starting to be analytical about it. That diffuses the emotions. Each of these lenses can help you intentionally cultivate a more positive story. I was raising dollars for a greenhouse on the campus, and the project was delayed from one crazy thing to the next for over 7 years. This is when I already had major gifts in place. Can you imagine this? So there was a part of me that wanted to whine. Instead, I said, "All right, I'm going to use this to build stronger relationships with my donors by communicating with them every single delay and trouble that happens with this in a straightforward way." not a dramatic way, but I would say, okay, now there's another building that's going to shade the greenhouse. Now the community is looking at whether it wants this other building to go up and having community meetings. We have to let this whole process happen. Now that there have been all these delays, it's going to change the price of these things, so we have to go back and renegotiate how we're going to manage this whole building campaign. But let me tell you, the eventual ribbon-cutting ceremony was a joyous day. It was just tremendous. And I attribute that to the fact that instead of adopting the drama, I used this to build stronger relationships with my donors by this continuous communication. All right, the third factor, our minds and how our minds focus energy. Many of us view multitasking as a necessity in the face of all the demands we juggle. But, and you've heard me say this before, it actually undermines productivity. Distractions are costly. Even a temporary shift in attention from one task to another, stopping to answer an email or take a phone call, for instance, increases the amount of time to finish the primary task by as much as 25%, a phenomenon known as switching time. It's far more efficient to fully focus for 90 to 120 minutes, then take a true break, then fully focus on the next activities. And again, the way to begin this whole mind piece of this is to focus in on where you are now. Do a little bit of a self-assessment. Track how much you struggle to concentrate. Relentless interruptions, piles on your desk screaming at you. Have you ever noticed that if you've got a messy office, oh, do me, do me, do me, oh, do me, don't forget about me. Remember, you still have this to do. Oh, what about this? All that stuff is screaming at you. Dings on your computer or on your phone. Many of us are in open office structures. We've got a lot of stuff that is pulling at our focus and pulling at our mind's energy. Two rituals that can help: leave your desk and go to a conference room, go to a library. I literally will, you know, go to a space outside of my office to work on something I need to focus on. The second thing I do is schedule an appointment with yourself to get a specific task done. If it's a big writing project like my e-zine or these calls, the next thing I do is I literally have a rule, no phones in meetings, and keep meetings short. Now, I have clients that push back on this. Oh, I've got to be able to be accessible to my children. You know, if your kids need to talk to you for less than a half an hour or even an hour meeting, I think you need to take a look at that and examine how much of a helicopter parent you're being. Understand that every glance costs you 25% more time. I know you've heard these, but I just want to reinforce them. Schedule email and social media time. Do it, then stay away from it. Set up your emergency systems. Your kids are your kids. They're not an excuse for you to feel needed and accessible 24/7. Understand that the second you look at your phone, you have given up the control of your energy to someone else. Finally, another way to mobilize mental energy is to focus systematically on activities that have the most long-term leverage. So concentrate the first hour of every day on your most important topic. But I found that as I do a better job of managing my energy, I've got more energy throughout the whole day. So starting with that biggest task first thing in the morning isn't as important as it used to be. Okay, next, the human spirit, the energy of meaning and purpose. Who we are as partners in the missions of our nonprofits probably has a major impact in our energy, because the human spirit, our meaning and our purpose, so intertwined with our nonprofits, is a big energy booster. But you know what? It's probably also a detriment at the same time, Because we can tap into the energy of the human spirit when our everyday work and activities are consistent with our values, and it gives us this wonderful meaning, wonderful sense of meaning and purpose. But it can also be that very passion for what we're doing that drives us to pushing ourselves beyond reasonable limits. Generally, if we're doing work that really matters to us, typically we feel more positive energy, focus better, and demonstrate greater perseverance. Regrettably, the high demands and fast pace in our nonprofit, lives also leaves us energy, doesn't always leave us energy to appreciate what we do for the world. And often we are in the background of great results, the great results we orchestrate for our work. What do I mean by that? Well, we always are pushing our leadership forward. We're crediting our volunteers. We're wanting somebody else to take the credit for the good work that's happening, and you know you made this happen. So I think it's important to say, I made this happen, not in a sense where we need to have someone say, oh, Marcy, you did a great job here, but give ourselves a mental pack, a mental pat on the back. As much as possible, of course, we include everybody on the team who made this thing happen, and we try to give everybody that pat on the back, but give yourselves that pat on the back. Give yourselves that attagirl, attaguy. Remind yourself what this really matters to you. I think it's important to be a little introspective and say, what do you want to be remembered for? What do I want to be remembered for? I don't want to be remembered as that crazy woman who worked these long hours and made people miserable. When my kids call me and ask, can you come to my band concert, Mom? I want to say, yep, I'll be there and I'll be in the front row. I don't want to be that mom that comes in, sits in the back of the room, is on my phone, and then steps out to take a phone call. That's not who I want to be. That's not how I want to be remembered. What do you want to be remembered for? To access the energy of the human spirit, you need to clarify priorities and establish rituals in three categories: doing what you do best and enjoy most at work, consciously allocating time and energy to all areas of your life, work, family, health, and service to others. What you deem most important and living your core values in your daily behaviors. When you're attempting to discover what you do best and what you enjoy most, it's important to realize that these two things aren't necessarily mutually inclusive. You may get a lot of positive feedback about something you're really good at, but you know what? You don't really enjoy that. Conversely, you can love doing something, but you don't really have a gift for it. So that achieving success requires more energy than it makes sense to invest. Does that make sense to you? I think this is a really important thing. To help discover this, think about when you're in your sweet spot, feeling effective, effortlessly absorbed, inspired, and fulfilled. Then spend some time understanding precisely what energized you so positively and what specific talents you were drawing on. For me, it's speaking or singing in public. Why? I love the reaction of lifting people up. The feedback is massive for my positive joy. What's yours? What's your sweet spot? A senior leader I worked with realized that one of the activities he least liked was reading and summarizing detailed giving reports, whereas one of his favorites was brainstorming new strategies. So working with this leader, we found a direct report who loved getting into those numbers, and he delegated that task to him, happily settling for brief oral summaries from this fellow once a week. It was all he needed. This leader also began scheduling a free-form 90-minute optional strategy session every other week with the most creative people in his team. This got to be a pretty popular thing, coming in and just randomly brainstorming. It not only lifted him up, it lifted his team members up as well. In the second category, devoting time and energy to what's important to you, there's often a similar divide between what people say is important and what they actually do. Rituals can help close this gap. So a lot of times we'll say spending time with family is what matters most. But guess what first gets the hit when the pressure's on our family? So institute a ritual in which you switch off for some time every single evening when you get home and focus on your family. You don't need those couple of hours when you're supposed to be 100% present with your family. This is so important. And also, I used to drive up into my garage on the phone doing one more thing. Now, I about halfway home, end those calls and start putting that phone down and mentally shifting to my home life. So when I walk in the door, I'm already in family mode. That's a really important thing. That third category, practicing your core values in your everyday behavior, is a challenge for many of us as well. Most people are living at such a furious pace that they rarely stop to ask themselves what they stand for and who they want to be. As a consequence, they let external demands dictate their action. How do you get at this? Ask yourself, what are the qualities that you find most off-putting when you see them in others? It's interesting because sometimes we can't get at the positive, my friends, but we sure know what we don't like. So by describing what you can't stand, you intentionally get at what you stand for. So if you're offended by stinginess, generosity is probably one of your key values. If you are especially put off by rudeness, it's likely that consideration is a big value for you. As in the other categories, establishing rituals can help bridge the gap between the values you aspire to and how you currently behave. If you discover that consideration is a key value, but you're perpetually late for meetings, hello, this was Marcy, the ritual might be to end meetings you run 5 minutes earlier than usual and intentionally show up 5 minutes earlier for meetings that follow. Addressing these three categories help people go a long way towards achieving a greater sense of alignment, satisfaction, and well-being in their lives and in their jobs. Those feelings are a source of positive energy in their own right and reinforce our desires to persist at rituals in other dimensions as well. By managing your energy, you can bring your best performance to whatever activity comes up, whether it's being 100% present in conversations, contributing creative ideas in a meeting, or fully focusing on a critical task. You can achieve results that are far superior to the incremental gains you might get from time management techniques. So managing your energy has far more impact. I'd like to close today with these five tips to helping enhance your energy. One, recognize the race you need to run. We've often heard people say, it's a marathon, not a sprint. I get that, but I think it's a little bit different than that, because in this marathon, we have some big tasks, and if we sometimes look at the whole job, and it goes on and on and on, this long marathon, that's depleting. Instead, I like to think of it as a marathon and a sprint. So we've got these mini goals and mini sprints, and we accomplish them, and that gives us energy within this big, long marathon project or work life or personal life goal we're trying to achieve. So it's a marathon and a sprint. Recognize the race you need to run. Two, be an energizer. Now, being an energizer doesn't mean you're an entertainer, you're charismatic, you're intense. Rather, it means that we bring ourselves fully into an interaction. Think about the times when you're most able to listen, to be fully present, and energize others. Build more of those interactions into your day, and you'll find that your own energy gets a boost. Number three, know what drains you and what sustains you. I can't say this enough. If there are people or situations or Facebook posts from people that you just feel at the end of it, you just feel like someone let the air out of your balloon, push those babies out of your life. Take steps to avoid them. Instead, build more of the activities that energize you and sustain you into your day. It's really important. Number four, pace yourself like an elite performer. So what do elite musicians, actors, chess players, athletes have in common? They do interval training. They do interval training. This gets back on that whole idea of 90 minutes on, 15 minutes off, 120 minutes on, 30 minutes off. Professionals maximize their productivity by working in those 90-minute bursts followed by recovery time. It's fascinating to me. At the gym these days, it's all about interval training. It's all about a big burst, stop, a big burst, stop, instead of those, I'm working out for an hour. Those days are gone, my friends. It's all about interval training. Number five, don't be a professional pretzel. Don't be a professional pretzel. Trying to be someone you're not is really hard work. It drains your energy. Being a professional pretzel, and what I mean by that is twisting into someone other than yourself, is exhausting. The alternative, being your authentic self at work, might seem scary and exhausting too, but actually, it's a huge relief. When you stop fighting against your strengths and start using them, you unleash energy rather than consuming it. You feel more at ease and you perform better. I will tell you what, I am a 9 quick start. I am just an energy person. I vomit energy. I am not the person that's going to sit there and pound out the timeline and pound at doing it. Now, I need to do this in my work and with my clients, but I do that in a very precise way. I know when I'm doing it, and the bulk of my time and the way I serve them best is being the solution to the problems they face, is being the idea person against the things that the obstacles that they see as insurmountable. I see all kinds of solutions. That's my strength. So in short, managing your energy means being authentic at work and encouraging others to do the same. Discover and play to your signature strengths. Make room for your team to play to theirs. As a result, you'll be able to unleash greater performance for yourself and as a team. I'd like to wish each and every one of you a happy Thanksgiving and also encourage you to be strictly yourself at home, to be who you want to be around your family, to not try to be somebody else because snarky Aunt Sarah's visiting or some personal family deal is coming up in these holiday times. Be authentically yourself. So until next time, take a deep breath. Invest in joy. Create your legacy of joy. This is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker, and this has been the Artful Asking Success Club. Dial down the drama, dial up the success. I look forward to seeing you next month. Bye-bye now.